Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'm reading from the Bhagavad Gita. It is the 18th chapter, 65th verse, and the title of the chapter is Perfection of Renunciation. And the title of tonight's talk is How to Experience Spiritual Ecstasy. And this particular verse really zeroes in on that. So I'll read the Sanskrit first, and after that I'll read the translation, and we can all read it responsively. And in addition to that, we can hear Srila Prabhupada's elucidating purports. So, to begin with. Manmana bhava magbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mamme vaishyasi satyam te Pratijane priyosume. Translation. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Please repeat. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna, who is in pure Krishna consciousness, will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. The most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend of Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. The most outstanding quality of Arjuna, which is illustrated by the very fact at the end of this book, Krishna says, have you heard me with an attentive mind? Are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? And Arjuna answers, he says, yes, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am firm and free to act according to your instructions. So at the beginning of this, narration, Arjuna was not in a position at that moment to act. He was confused. He said, now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I'm your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So the first thing he did is ask for help. He asked for guidance. He asked for direction because he was having a difficulty. The difficulty was to fight persons on the other side of the battlefield who were his friends, his uncles, his grandfather, his cousins, many persons who were dear to him. Well, how do you go against and battle someone who you love? It is your duty to kill those persons, because this was what we called a war, which was fought over on the basis of ethical grounds, which I won't go into. That's a whole story in itself. But the important point is the quality of Arjuna is that he surrendered to Krishna. Surrender means you give up your body, you give your mind, you give your emotions, you give your thoughts, you give your feelings. You give your all to Krishna because he is the all in all. There is nobody higher, no one greater, no one more grand, more powerful, more capable of helping us in our upward thrust towards spiritual enlightenment. So let me just continue the last part of this. In the eighth chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. So this this surrendering process, Krishna, it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One should accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. One should reject those things which are unfavorable for discharging devotional service. One should believe firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. One should always feel dependent upon the mercy of God. One should have no separate interest except the interests of God or Krishna. And one should be meek and humble. This is what a surrendered person is, and it is defined very clearly in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, those particular qualities that we need to develop. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this very book I'm reading, as they, meaning us, surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And what is the reward that he gives us according to the degree of our surrender? He gives us himself. And what is that self? That self is Sat-Chit-Ananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss absolute. But he especially gives us this bliss about which I'm going to be speaking about tonight. Krishna is bliss. That is what his body is made out of. He is all knowledge. He is all peace. He is eternality. Although he may appear like a human being, he's anything but. And so he gives of himself according to our surrender. And since he is all-powerful, he is all-knowing, he is everywhere present, he's omniscient, he can impart to us more knowledge, more guidance, more understanding, more confidence, more peace, more strength, more love, all of the things that truly make a human being extremely happy. So I'll just conclude over here. Prabhupada says, one should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi forms as Vishnu, Narayan, Ram, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge. And this is disclosed to Arjuna because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. So some of you may be wondering, does it mean I can't worship Lord Ramchandra anymore? Does it mean when the appearance day of Lord Varaha comes up, I can't worship Lord Varaha anymore? Not at all. What it means here is that We should continue to venerate, to glorify, to honor all forms of the Supreme Lord. But what Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing here is that if we want to develop pure love of Krishna and all that Krishna means, then we need to focus and concentrate on him and Srimati Radharani as our main focus. The others we will also focus on, but not as intensely, not as firmly. Now, sometimes people come to me and they say, well, my main Ishta Devata, or my main Lord or form of Lord that I worship is Lord Narsingadev. Do you want me to give him up so that I could just worship Lord Krishna? And the answer is resoundingly no. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was asked Murari Gupta to please start worshiping Krishna now, and you can stop worshiping Lord Ramachandra. So he tried and he tried all night, and he was having headaches, different kinds of illness, different kinds of symptoms. And in the morning he came to the Lord and said, I just can't do that. My mind and my heart are totally, thoroughly, fully given to Lord Ramachandra. I've been doing this since I'm a little boy. Well, how can I just give him up? So Lord Chaitanya smiles and he says, yes, that's really the way a person should be. If you have been dedicated, if you've been devoted, if you've been concentrated and focused upon that particular deity, then yes, Lord Ramachandra is not different from Krishna. He's not different than Lord Varaha, not different from Lord Narasingadev. So if that's who you've been worshiping, you have a predilection, you have an inclination to worship them, then that's fine. But Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here, but for those who do not have such a dedication or such a focus or inclination, then we can take Krishna here and we can concentrate primarily on Krishna and of course worship the others, but without the same degree of focus or concentration or intensity. In other words, Krishna becomes our end-all and be-all. Now, why does he say this? He says this because if you want to really love someone, you need to concentrate your whole heart on that person, you see. For example, a mother loves her child, and then she's always got the child in mind. When the child is walking here, she looks at him. Child is walking there, she looks at him. If she hears the child murmur or start to cry, she goes in to look at him. In fact, if she goes to work, still the child is on her mind. Why? Because she loves the child. And the more she thinks of her child, the more she comes to love her child. And as the child is growing up, even more love and more attachment and more interest is being developed. So if we want to get to love somebody, especially the Supreme Lord, and we should not assume that we love him, that's not something we assume. We actually develop it. Because love means that we should be ready to sacrifice body, sacrifice mind, sacrifice our thoughts, sacrifice our intelligence. It is the duty of every living entity in this world to sacrifice or to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, his wealth, his words, and his intelligence. This is out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So sacrifice to the degree that we will sacrifice or that we want to sacrifice, to that degree do we love the Lord. Some of us may have in our entire day, we may give only 5% sacrifice. Or some of us are chanting japa, some of us are doing 2 hours a day, so we're giving more sacrifice. Some of us are spending several hours sacrificing our life. Many of us are going out and doing book distribution and sacrificing our life. Many of us are ready to give up our lives if that's what Krishna would to ask. So there are different degrees of surrender. Different degrees of sacrifice, different degrees of humility. How much am I willing to give up for Krishna? And as Krishna says, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. You give a lot, I give a lot of myself. He gives his love to you, and that love transmits or transforms itself from your heart. It then begins to radiate out into your mental body, and from the mental body to the physical body, and one feels transcendental bliss. There are many different symptoms or expressions of transcendental bliss. Some of them are, for example, one may become, in just looking at the picture of Krishna, or reading this glorious, most wonderful book, or just seeing some devotees dancing and chanting, he may become stunned. He can't even talk. He can't move. He's just gaga. Wow, amazing. Or stunned. He may be perspiring profusely. It comes out when Lord Chaitanya would dance and what he would chant, the holy name. Perspiration was coming down his face. He was even perspiring blood at times. It was absolutely amazing. But he is God himself playing the part of a devotee. It also, there is what is called hairipilation, or the standing up of hairs on the arms and on the neck, which one may feel in relation to chanting God's holy names, or doing the artic that we often do, offering incense and offering flowers and offering the candles, offering different things to the Lord, water and so forth. And as we do this, it enlivens us, it enthuses us, and it may cause this tingling in the skin, in which one begins to feel this upraising of the hairs on the arm and on the head. One may tremble. Very interesting story, which is told in the Nectar of Devotion. By the way, these books that I'm mentioning are all on the table there in the form of audiobooks that I've done. One day, Daruka, does everybody know who Daruka is? He's the charioteer of Krishna. So one day, Krishna was sitting in his chariot, and he was being fanned by Daruka. He was fanning him. But as he was fanning him, and he was looking at the beautiful face of Krishna, the lotus-like eyes that he has, the warm, kindly smile that he has, and Krishna was enjoying this pure service. He wasn't just fanning. When he was fanning, his thought was, I am fanning the most wonderful, the most powerful, the most glorious person. What an opportunity, what a privilege I have. Who in the whole world is getting a chance to fan God? He who is running all the planets, or managing all the planets, making everything happen, and making things stop and go, creating, maintaining, and destroying. This very great, glorious, grand individual is right before me, sitting on a chariot, and he's fanning. He's not just going like this, like you might do for some ordinary person, but he's fanning, and these wonderful, glorious thoughts of devotion, these thoughts of appreciation, of gratitude that he is so privileged to have. So as he begins to fan, his hand begins to tremble. And he's starting to tremble. He can't hold the fan anymore. So he's trying to fan, but he can't because his hand is going like this. So he puts the fan down and he says, my dear Lord, why are you flooding me with so much transcendental bliss? I can't get my service done. He wants to do the service, and that's what the purity of his service is. He's not interested in divine bliss. And for that very reason, Krishna appreciates how loving, how sweet, how unconditional and undemanding his love is. And the way he was responding is by expressing his own love in Daruka's heart. Remember that we all know that Krishna is also in the heart as the super soul. So he was expressing his appreciation in the form of love. So that love was infused into Daruka's heart, and then it flooded into his body, and then from his body, he couldn't do his service. So this is fascinating, that a person is saying to the Lord, I don't really care for the bliss, at least not now while I'm doing my service. You can save it for another time, but now is the time to please you, and that's all I'm supposed to be doing. So that is the important point that I was trying to make in regard to having a focus. And when we have this particular focus and we concentrate on it, then we begin to receive from Krishna the blessing in the form of this love. And this love, as I said, bubbles and permeates through our entire body as it has never done in our normal, ordinary human life. Because the love of God is so intense, is so firm, is so flood-like, that one becomes so overwhelmed that he cannot even think. So I was giving different symptoms of this, and I had told about how trembling is one of them. Another is tears may come down, and they may continue to flow. When Lord Chaitanya himself, when he would cry out of ecstasy, because he felt some separation. Remember, he was playing the part of Srimati Radharani, although he's in a male form. He was playing the part of Srimati Radharani, and he was feeling the ecstasy of separation. And feeling separate from Krishna, tears would flow down his face. And sometimes they became so intense that they were gushing out, and devotees were all around him just trying to hold on to those tears and rub them in their own bodies, around their face, their head, and so forth, so that they could get the joy of associating with the Supreme Lord through the nectar of his tears. So, and some of those tears would be falling on the floor. Devotees were fighting over who can get the tears first. One would take it, another one try to take a little bit from his hand, and because it was precious. It's like when you have people who are greedy for gold, and suddenly you see gold all over the floor, everybody dives for it and tries to get it and hoard as much as he can. Well, that's the way pure devotees are for the nectar of Krishna's transcendental bliss, and in the form of course, the nectar of the of Lord Chaitanya's his tears. In other words, you become a miser for those tears because they bring so much happiness, so much satisfaction, so much fulfillment. They expedite our advancement in Krishna consciousness by hundreds and thousands of years. So powerful, so potent, so forceful are the tears of the Supreme Lord, the smile of the Lord, the glance of the Lord. They are powerful, and even persons who were on the battlefield, who were fighting against the Lord, when they were killed by Krishna, they didn't die and go to hell because they were fighting against God. Just by looking at Krishna, they became completely purified of all the dross or the filth of their what was in their mind, such as their lust or their anger, their greed, their envy, their illusions, their pride, their gluttony, or any of these types of qualities which do not help us go up but rather bring us down. So by looking at Krishna, all the dirt, it's like suddenly you're put under a waterfall and you're mud all over your body. Just think about it. You're going under this waterfall and it's coming down in a thunderous force, and in about 2 or 3 seconds, you're clean. So that's what it's like when a person is dying and looking at Krishna and then fully cleansed. And where does he go? Where does he go? Back home, back to Godhead. And why should one want to go there? What's the big deal to go back to Godhead? Well, this is a world of anxiety, a world of uncertainty, a world of confusion, a world of doubt. People don't know what to do, what not to do, who to follow, who shouldn't follow. So many people giving advices. One doctor says, you should take this potion. Another doctor says, no, don't take that potion. Take this one. You take this pill. And then another doctor says, no, discontinue that. You try this. So you've been trying this. You've been trying that. You've been trying this before you know it. You took this one, and then you took this one, and they didn't complement one another. What happened? You got a new disease. It happens. And then for the third and the fourth, many people are cultivating diseases just by taking so many excessive medications, which may not be necessary. I'm only giving you an example, and I'm not in any way informing you or advising you to stop seeing your doctor. So please don't misunderstand. You'll go home, that guy, he said, I shouldn't see the doctor. What kind of Hare Krishna? So you should see your doctor, and especially if you have faith in him. But my point is this, is that who to accept advice from? This is the point. So Krishna is giving advice here to all of us, what we should do and what we should know, what we should not do. In the 16th chapter of this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one should discard all whimsical impulses. I'm trying to remember the exact verse, but it's not coming to the surface of my mind. Yes, he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims, what we think, what we have impulse to do, I have this feeling, so it must be right. I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm glorious, so I have this feeling it has to be right. This is the egotism which leads to not only madness, but definitely misery. And there are all kinds of miseries. So, as he said, he who discards scriptural injunctions, therefore one should understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be what? Elevated. So Krishna is simply echoing what I have just said, which I was echoing of what he said, and namely that you can get what we should do, get the rules, get the regulations, they're all here, and by following those rules and regulations, our life gradually moves upward, it becomes elevated, we begin to develop an attraction, an affection, a devotion, a dedication to Krishna. It doesn't come all at once, but by daily, for example, chanting. You chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare. When you chant the holy name, there are different ways to chant it, and I will go into that in just a few moments, but I just want to finish this purport. So there are many different ways of chanting God's holy names. And we can chant it mechanically, indifferently, thoughtlessly, or we can chant it thoughtfully, concentratedly, lovingly, appealingly, like a child crying out for its mother. This is the way Srila Prabhupada has instructed us that we should. Now, how does a child cry out for its mother? Urgently. When it needs food, it wants food and it's urgent. And if it doesn't get it, it screams, and it's so piercing and shrilly that you must answer the call. How can you not? You know? So the important point is to chant in a way in which there's some noise going on. Please take the child out. That would be appreciated. Thank you so much. So by chanting in a way in which we feel as a dependent upon Krishna. What is a dependent? It means you need him. It means you can't live without him. But very often out of egotism, we tend to forget Krishna. We go, we do a job, and we get paid for it. We buy things, and we say, well, I didn't even think of Krishna, and I'm getting all these things. So if I'm getting all these things without thinking, so why should I think of Krishna? This is a natural thought. We should think of Krishna because in the ultimate analysis, it is he who is giving you the job. It is he who is making the water which coming that you're drinking. It is he who is growing the foods that you're eating. Without Krishna, nothing would grow, nothing would happen. He feeds us. He clothes us, he shelters us, he guides us, he directs us. He does all these things to enable us to ultimately come back home, back to Godhead. That is his love for us. And in spite of our offenses, in spite of our indifference, in spite of our uncaringness, in spite of our thoughtlessness, can somebody shut that door back there so that we don't have to hear all that? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Yes. So Krishna, in spite of our indifference and our reluctance, it doesn't really matter. He will give us his mercy. He will give us his kindness. He will give us his thoughtfulness. And he will help us in every which way to enable us to come back home, back to Godhead. Even though we commit offenses, even though we do wrongs, we commit sins, we violate regulative principles. And in so doing, it's an offense to Krishna. So I'll continue only when the noise stops. I'm not going to compete with this. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Yes, so you see, I'm on a train of thought, and it's moving in a direction, and then I'm diverted from that train of thought. It's like taking you an examination, and suddenly somebody plays some rock and roll music, and you can't remember what you had programmed yourself to remember for that particular talk. And Srila Prabhupada always used to say, please take the children out. I'm not being an original in that by any means. Getting back, Krishna, although we are making offenses and we are ignoring him, or we're offending or deriding him, or showing our lack of interest in him, he cares about us so much that he sends a great glorious person like Srila Prabhupada here so that we can learn how to get back home. Back to Godhead. Krishna is non-different from his name. He's in his name. And being in the name, when we chant the name, we are associating with him. And as we become more and more advanced in Krishna consciousness, we will feel that association. No less than if I, for example, extend my hand, and let's say my hand is cold and yours is mine is cold and yours is warm, then I will begin to absorb some of the warmth of your hand. Because two things are touching which have particular properties of warmth and coldness. So when we associate with the Supreme Lord, who is eternality, knowledge, and bliss absolute, by that association, we will begin to absorb Krishna's peace, Krishna's joy, Krishna's bliss, and Krishna's strength, and so many of the qualities that Krishna has. So he has given us the name, but the question is how to chant it. How to chant it in a way in which we can truly associate with Krishna. Okay, if I am talking to, for example, this gentleman here, and I'm speaking to him, and I'm talking, and he's looking away and looking in different directions, then I don't feel very inspired or very eager to talk to him, because he's looking away. Now, if we begin chanting God's holy names, and we begin thinking of other things, why would Krishna want to listen to us? For example, a person is chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, 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 Ram. Let's see, I got another 5 minutes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. Ah, what a day. You know. So if you're chanting that way, Krishna says, oh God, why doesn't he just stop chanting? I can't stand it. Because it's not devotional. There's no love in that chanting. There's no heart in that chanting. Or some of the other chanters, we call them the machine gun chanters. You know, they go on like, sounds like a tobacco auction, if you've ever heard one. No, I can't listen to that because I don't even know what he's talking about. I don't even know which god he's worshiping. So, therefore, no, that's definitely not. So Krishna is waiting to hear your heart. Or we got the other type of chanting who calls his mommy when he calls. Instead of saying, he say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Mam 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 Mam, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Mam 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 Mam, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Mam 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 Mam. But wait a minute, it's Rama Rama Rama, not Mama Mama Mama. Well, your mama may be a very good person, but Rama is the person who's going to give you transcendental bliss. Your mama, she'll just give you an ice cream cone, and that'll be the end of it. So, therefore, it becomes incumbent upon us to chant in a way which we are enabling and allowing Krishna to hear our heart. Many people chant from the head. It's like they're doing an intellectual exercise, like, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. The pronunciation is perfect, but where's the heart? Krishna doesn't care for your pronunciation. He doesn't care for your sound so much. Yes, we should pronounce the words, but he wants your heart. It's a loving exchange. He wants to give you something. He wants to give you what? He wants to give you his heart. That's what he lives for. He's nourished on your transcendental love for him. Unconditional, undemanding, completely given in a totally surrendered fashion. And when it is done in that way, he's ready to respond to you. Some devotees tell me, I never feel any ecstasy. Well, because you don't give Krishna any ecstasy. That's what the whole point of chanting is, to increase his pleasure. You increase Krishna's pleasure when you just give your whole heart, crying out like a child crying for its mother, appealing to him. And what do we appeal to? Enable me to please serve you in such a way that I can please you, that I can delight you, that I can uplift you. My only business as your devotee is to give pleasure to you. And that's what I'm having difficulty doing. No, the child has to be brought outside, please. Then no talking, because I don't speak when the children speak. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I have to do this interruption, but, you know, it's really so everyone can hear this. And if the child speaks again, I pray and I beg and I'll get down on my knees. Please take the child outside. Thank you. Getting back to the point of the chanting, so we need to know the difference between chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I said, you know, I see all this kind of chanting. Persons half asleep, machine gun, mama, mama, and all of this. How should one chant? One should chant from the heart. When you're appealing, when you're begging, you're crying out, it's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. It's almost like a song. And the song should flow out of us and reach the heart of Krishna. And so that he says, yes, I'm attracted. I feel your love. And I want to reciprocate with your love. And I will reciprocate. And you're going to feel the bliss of transcendental consciousness because you're giving yourself, you're giving your all, you're giving everything to me. And that's all I want. And that's why I love you. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I am always within the core of the pure devotee's heart. The devotee does not know anything else but me, and I do not know anything else but him. So Krishna is saying to us, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to everyone. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am a friend to him. So Krishna says in this beautiful verse, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee, offer obeisances. So how will we always think of Krishna? Always means 100% of the time. Well, we have to go to jobs. We sit in front of computers. We have equations we have to deal with. We have analysis to deal with. We have things. What Krishna is saying, depending upon where we are in our circumstances, if, for example, you're at a job and you have to concentrate, there's always a few minutes where you sit back and just kind of think and relax. Or they give you 10-minute breaks, and sometimes you have go to lunch. They give you an hour, but you can finish your lunch in a half hour. So you have enough half hour to read about Krishna or hear Srila Prabhupada's wonderful lectures. Or you're driving in the car and you could be listening to some of his books. Or you can be chanting. But the important thing is to chant as an appeal. Like you're talking to someone. Again, I come back to this example. If I start to talk to you and you start looking this way and that way, I don't want to talk to you anymore. You're not listening to me. You couldn't care less about me. But as soon as you look at me and I get your full captivated attention, well, I'm going to talk more and more because you're digesting, you're assimilating, you're absorbing everything that I'm saying as you actually are. You haven't taken your eyes off me since the beginning of this talk. Thank you, Hare Krishna. So the point is this, not that I'm so important or anything like that, but the point is this, is that Krishna is a person. He has feelings. He is sentient. Sentient means that he has... He hears, he sees, he smells, he's intelligent, and he sees your heart. So give him what he only wants. You can't give, even if you give him food, he can make all the food he wants. Or you offer him clothes. If you offer anything and everything, you offer him millions of dollars, he doesn't care for these things. He only cares if you offer them, as Krishna says, as one offers me with what? Love and devotion, I reward him accordingly. As one offers me with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So, therefore, Krishna will accept when you offer it with love and devotion. So before you offer anything, Try to remember these point that Krishna doesn't care for the object, he cares for your love. And if you saturate the object with your love, Krishna will just, if it's food, he'll gobble it down. If it's clothing, he'll enjoy wearing it. Whatever it is, he will enjoy it because you gave your whole heart to it. So you will in turn receive the mercy of the Lord. So before I end this, and I will also take some questions, but I would like to tell just a very brief story. You may have heard it before. It's entitled The Mercy of God. One day there was a king, and the king, he had a minister. And whenever anything would happen, whether it be good or bad, the minister would always cry out, "Ah, such is the mercy of God." Well, the king started to get disgusted with everything is the mercy. When the king would do something nice, the minister would say, "Ah, such is the mercy of God. Why are you always saying such a, don't I get any credit?" he would say. "I don't get credit. I did it, but always you're giving the credit to the Lord." He says, "Well, that's the way I understand it." He says, "Too much, this is the mercy, such is the mercy of God." He was getting up to here with it. Anyway, they decided to go out on a hunting expedition, and the minister and the king got on their horse. They had a few soldiers on the side, and they began driving along, I should say galloping along, and about 25 yards away in the pathway, there was a cobra. So the cobra was lying, and suddenly it reared up its head, and it, you know how it does this kind of a thing? So a cobra was it was waiting for the horse, and it was going to dig its fangs in and kill the horse in that manner. So the horse, seeing it, reared up and threw its legs up, and the king on the horse immediately fell down on the ground. His thumb was right near the cobra's head, and the cobra dug his two fangs right into the thumb. And the minister said, "Ah, such is the mercy of God." King looked at him, immediately took his dagger. The poison was flowing through his arms, and if it got through the whole body, he would die. He chopped off his thumb, and as soon as he chopped the thumb off, again the minister said, "Ah, such is the mercy of God." And he looked at the soldiers, and he looked at the minister. He says, "You're absolutely crazy. How can that be mercy?" Told the soldiers, "Take him back to the palace, put him in the dungeon. I don't want to look at him. He's lost his position as minister." So the king started, he wanted to finish off his engagement of doing a little hunting. So he drove for about maybe half a mile or so, and suddenly found that he was surrounded by a whole batch of tugs. You know, the tugs are those persons who, they offer human sacrifices to goddess Kali. So they were looking for somebody to offer a sacrifice to when they saw the king. And they said, by the way, he has a bandage on covering. When he chopped off his thumb, he bandaged it up with a cloth. So they looked at him and they said, "Well, he looks like a good specimen. Let's bring him to the priest." So the priest gave him a casual look, said, "Yeah, throw him in the water, bathe him, put some clean clothes on him, and then we'll chop his head off and offer him to Kali. And then she'll get the wonderful beverage of his, what's flowing out of his neck." So they put him in the water, and then they immediately they put these new white cloth around him, and then the head priest he had this big cleaver in his hand, and then he looked he wanted to look him over, so he looked at his head, he looked at his arms, and he looked at his legs, and when he looked back up, he said, "Hey, he's missing a thumb. You can't offer a thumbless hand to Kali. You have to offer her a full, perfect body. That's an offense." To offer a body that doesn't have a thumb. "Oh, you're useless. We can't use you. Get out of here." So he left, he got back on his horse, and he drove back to the palace, and he was driving, and he said, "You know, the minister was right. I lost my thumb, and I saved my life. Such was the mercy of God." But there was a problem, a question that he still had in his mind. So he went back to the palace. He went downstairs into the dungeon, and he went to the minister. He says, "Yes, well, you said it was right. This was mercy because he told him the story. My life was saved because I cut off my thumb." He says, "But I don't understand one thing." He says, "When I ordered you back, you know, to go to the dungeon, I ordered you back and you said, 'Ah, such is the mercy of God.' How could that be the mercy of God?" So he said, "Well, if you didn't order me back, I would have been with you. And since you didn't have a thumb, and I've got 10 good fingers, who do you think would have been killed?" So such was the mercy of God. So on that note, I would like to thank you all again for coming. And all glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to your service. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments that anyone would like to make before you go and have prasadam? Also, again, I remember you, if you'd like to get some of these CDs, please see me. There's price lists on the table. Or if you just want to take your prasadam, please go and take the prasadam. Thank you. Hare Krishna. No questions? No? Hare Krishna.